Robin Daly. Welcome to another edition of the Yes to Life show. Yes to Life, for those of you who don't know, is a UK charity currently celebrating its 10th year of supporting people with cancer in taking an integrative approach to their recovery, one that draws on the widest possible range of methods. If you'd like to know more, do go and look at the Yes to Life website, which is yestolife, yestolife.org.uk. This week, I'm talking to a Swedish scientist named Ulla Johansson, who has a very important message of caution for us all regarding EMFs, or electromagnetic fields. He contributed to a 2007 bioinitiative report, which aimed to help set a standard for exposure to EMFs to provide a measure of safety to the public. So to give you some idea of the stance of the report, here's a little excerpt. There may be no lower limit at which exposures do not affect us. Until we know if there is a lower limit below which bioeffects and adverse health impacts do not occur, it's unwise from a public health perspective to continue business as usual, deploying new technologies that increase EMF exposures, particularly involuntary exposure. The recording technology used for the interview has resulted in poorer than usual sound quality, but I hope that won't detract from your enjoyment of what is really a very important discussion. So I'm talking now to Ulla Johansson in Sweden, who is one of the co-authors of the report I mentioned. And first of all, hello Ulla, great to talk to you today. And I wonder if you'd just like to introduce yourself and just say a little bit about your work.
Well, thank you so much. It's a great honor to be on your program. And I have been working for quite a few decades here at the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm, Sweden. And I'm at the Department of Neuroscience, where I'm heading a group called the Experimental Dermatology Unit. Don't get misled by that. I'm a neuroscientist, so my specialty is the central and peripheral nervous system and the way the brain communicates with the body as well as with the whole world through its most foremost antennas, which are, for instance, the skin, the eyes, the ears, the nose, and the mouth with the taste organs, and in that way gets very important information from the exterior. And then for quite a number of years ago, in the late 70s and early 80s, I got interested in the potential health effects of man-made artificial electromagnetic fields, like from power lines, computer screens, from Wi-Fi, mobile phones, etc.
Okay, well, this, of course, is an area that many people are concerned about, but there's lots of mixed messages and lots of uncertainty around it. And your report obviously weighed in quite heavily on a court in 2007. And so I'm interested, first of all, to discuss the recommendations it made and also to see what's happened since then, because things have obviously escalated considerably since then, but also the research has probably gone further. Just before we go any further, I'd like to just kind of establish the territory of what we're talking about here. So we're talking about non-ionizing radiation, i.e. not X-rays, but these are lower energy rays, which don't have the capacity to actually directly sort of destroy cells and affect their stability, but they have potential long-term effects. Is that correct?
That's indeed correct, but you know, at the same time, there are papers coming that point to that also non-ionizing radiation may affect cells in such a way so that the final outcome could be cell deterioration and cell death. So it's really a floating border here, I would say, and of course, more research always is needed to understand the mechanism behind this. And of course, it kind of boils down to the core issue, if this is dangerous or not. And as you pointed to, it's very important to see long-term studies being done. At the same time, we are already doing them in the sense that everyone is exposed 24/7 wherever they are, wherever they work, in schools, etc. And it's a whole body irradiation. And it's not a low level irradiation in any way, because if we just look at, for instance, the third generation mobile telephony and ask ourselves how much more such radiation is our body affected by today compared to like 10, 15 years ago, what is the increase? And the increase is actually a quintillion times. That's a wow. 1 with 18 zeros after. So the increase compared to the natural background is just, well, astronomical is too low to say. It's biblical in a sense. You know, it's an enormous increase. And then you have to understand that for other frequency domains, these increases can be much, much larger.
Wow. Okay, well, that's a good piece of context for us to start from. So the umbrella term for this is EMFs. This is what people have heard of, electromagnetic frequencies. But actually, your report divides that into two types of exposure, and ELFs, which are extremely low frequencies. Now, these are associated generally with things like power lines and electrical devices. Is that correct?
Well, it is. But one of these electrical devices that we have close or very close to our body are, of course, wireless gadgets of different types. And the ELF fields from a mobile phone, for instance, is tremendously high, much, much higher than you would ever get from like a power line or a power source installation. And that's because you keep it so close to your body.
Yes. So you're actually saying that a mobile phone then actually has both types of radiation, because the other one I was about to mention is the radio frequency, which is what we normally associate with mobiles. That's the actual carrier they're using for sending the signal. So that's interesting. So a mobile phone is potentially got it's got both these types of radiation.
Well, and not potentially. I mean, they do have. That's very easy to measure. And, you know, when I hear in Stockholm, see parents with their small babies and they are talking with a mobile phone, and the baby is in a baby pram, you know, and then when they have finished their call, they throw the mobile phone down next to the baby. And then I will think, you know, that the parent doesn't understand that that's equal in the ELF range to throw down several Swedish electric train engines to the baby.
Wow.
And no parent would do that, you know, but they do.
Well, that's
so, and therefore, that's probably, you know, the legal reason why the manufacturers nowadays tell you to keep your wireless gadget like a mobile phone at least 1 inch away from your body, which is a very, very smart way, of course, to escape any form of liability or responsibility. Because, as you understand, when you buy your mobile phone, for instance, the moment you start to unpack it and touch it, you have violated the instructions.
Yes.
So the moment, I mean, when you do get the long-term effect, for instance, cancer or neurological damage, and you would bring them to court in Sweden or in the UK or in United States, the first question from them would be, well, which hand did you actually use? Well, I mostly used my right hand, but we told you, you couldn't do it. You need to keep it at least 1 inch away from your body, you know. Very smart.
Okay. All right, so that sort of defined the territory a bit, and the other thing to mention is that the way exposure is measured is in milligauss. That's the measure of the amount of exposure you're having.
Well, only for the ELF fields, you know. If you go up into the high frequency domains like radio frequency, then you mostly use power density, which would be microwatts per square meter, for instance. But the thing is, you have to remember, and this is a very important point, it's a little bit like measuring a gun. You can measure the weight of the gun, the length of it, you can check the color of it, and you would still not understand the deadly side of the firearm, you know, because, well, of course, you can probably smack someone in the head with the gun, you know, but it's actually the bullet, the velocity of the bullet. and the impact into biological matter which will kill you. And the bullet you don't even measure because it's in the drawer in a box sitting there waiting for you to load the gun. And therefore, when we come to all these electromagnetic fields and gadgets and equipments, we still don't know exactly what to measure from a biological and medical point of view. Is it power density? Is it SAR values, the specific absorption rate? Or is it something else? And the only thing we can be sure of is that something is definitely going on, because when scientists do well-controlled experiments, double-blind code and so on, they do see effects on everything ranging from molecules and bacteria to cells to tissues, organs, animals, plants, and even human beings. So, yes, something is definitely happening when you full-blown expose people or animals or plants to this, you know.
Okay, right. Okay, so in your report, you actually referred to what I mentioned earlier, which is the fact there's actually a lot of controversy and disagreement about how dangerous or otherwise these exposure to these types of radiation is. And I wonder if you'd like to say a little bit about, well, what's the basis for these disagreements? Why is there such wide variation in what's reported about them?
Well, that's a very interesting question. And of course, to begin with, one has to identify who is actually responsible for this exposure experiment. And at least in Sweden, that would be the big mother and the big father, namely the government and the parliament. They are the ones that are responsible because, like the operators and the manufacturers, they went to them and asked them if it was all right to whole body irradiate people 24/7, wherever they were, with these kind of microwaves that in experiments had been shown to affect cells and molecules and animals and whatever. And the parliament and the government in Sweden at least said yes. That's exactly what we want you to do, and that is actually based upon ideas from the European Union, who has pointed to the importance of such a rollout of various wireless communication devices. And to the best of my knowledge, at least in Sweden, I don't think any operator or manufacturer has ever violated any form of law. So, again, the responsibility lies definitely in the parliament and the government and their health authorities of various types. And then, of course, it's always a controversy, I would say, when new knowledge emerges. But in the scientific field, I don't sense that there is very much of a disagreement any longer. The number of papers is so overwhelming, you know. I mean, we are talking about tens of thousands or published peer-review-based scientific articles in very well-established scientific journals. And every week, there is, you know, some weeks I could have like 25 more on a single week that all are relevant. They're all scary from the point of view that they point to long-term as well as short-term effects. And the culprit always boils down to the electromagnetic signals of different types. But of course, then when this knowledge seeps out into society, other levels do have other ways to deal with knowledge. And it should be pointed out that science in itself has probably the most strict levels to really accept and call something a fact. If you go to the legal machinery, their level of acceptance is much lower, and should be, of course. And for a mother and father, they just want to know the answer to the simple question, is this gadget safe? Is it all right to give my son or daughter one of these computers or mobile phone? Is it all right for them to spend their day in a Wi-Fi-based school, for instance?
Exactly, yes. Okay, well, that's very interesting.
And, you know, also, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but also very importantly, we have within the European Union as well as the World Health Organization something called the precautionary principle. And that's a very interesting legal principle which practically states that even the suspicion of a single case could result in a dramatic reaction from society. A very well known such example is the mad cow disease, where single cases meant that in Europe alone, millions of animals were slaughtered just to be on the safe side. And, you know, the funny thing, or should we say the awkward thing, is that when you go to the field of health effects of electromagnetic fields, then there is not single cases, there are no suspicion. I mean, it's a very, very well established level of knowledge, and still there is no reaction, more or less, at all from society. And I don't have the answer really, but maybe it's so simple that things like profit, economy, politics, etc., is in play here. And just 1-2 weeks ago, I was down in Brussels, and when I came to the airport, and you know, you go out through these sliding doors, leaving the airport area, and outside there was a television team that started to film me immediately. And the first question to me was, well, Ole Johansson, how does it feel to come to Brussels, the center for power? And I said, what? There is no center for power here. And the American reporter looked very puzzled and said, but the European Commission and the European Parliament is here. But they don't have any power, I said. But who does, she said, you know. Well, as far as I understand, the power lies within the corporate industry and the banks, and few of them are situated in Brussels. And she suddenly saw kind of a light, and she said, oh, wow, I've never thought about that really. But of course, that's probably the reason why we don't see so much reaction from society as a general. It is, of course, driven by very important and understandable means, but maybe then the public health has got a price tag on it, and people are prepared for the sake of profit to play with the public health in one of the balances areas here, you know.
Well, that's such an important point, and it's one which I bump into all the time in my work, is that in the field of health, you're right, the agenda, unfortunately, is too often profit and not the well-being of the public.
Yeah, and you know, you shouldn't be so tough on this if we were talking about life necessity, like clean water, clean air, food and drink that you consume without risk, love, passion, understanding. Those are life necessities, but we are talking about toys. I mean, if suddenly all of these gadgets would disappear, nothing would happen to mankind. We would still continue to breathe, eat, talk, travel, and so on, you know, but doing it in a slightly other way. I'm just afraid that somewhere there are economical reasons to look aside, and that's scary in the sense, since, and I coined that expression actually, that this is the largest full-scale experiment ever with mankind. And if there would be, for instance, long-term effects, then this long-term experiment we were asking for before, it's already rolling, and the guinea pigs are all of us, including animals, plants, etc., you know. And every day when I go to bed, I say, you know, dear God, please make me wrong. Just make me wrong, because if I'm right and people are not listening, then there could be an enormous cost down the line. And again, we see that when you ask questions about this, there are some that has already answered these questions many, many years ago. I mentioned, for instance, the manufacturers, but also the insurance industry. They have a few things that they do not insure or reassure for, and one of them are health effects of electromagnetic fields. And when I was at a meeting in London in 2004, I met people from the insurance industry, including Lloyd's and Reassurance in Switzerland. I met people from the operators and so on. And it was very interesting that for them, it wasn't any question or disagreement or anything. They were sure that there were long-term health effects that would be very costly, and their reason not to engage in liability issues was because they were so dead sure and they didn't want to pay.
Right.
And they spoke just out about it. They were not trying to hide this. I remember one lawyer, he said that, you know, to run an insurance industry, that is an industry. It's based on risk, profit, and so on, you know. And here we see that this is an enormous risk to lose money, and we don't want to do that.
Yeah. So in a world driven by money, in the moves, the decisions of insurance companies are a very good indicator as to what's really...
Yeah, and you know, you can see that similar or very similar moves have been done by the manufacturers, the operators, the radiation protection authorities in the World Health Organization, and so on. They're all sliding slowly or rapidly backwards from this arena, saying, no way, we won't take any form of liability or responsibility for this.
No.
And that's very telling, because they answer the most common question I get is from a parent asking me, is this safe for my kid? And they say, no, it isn't.
Right.
That's what they say, you know.
Right, okay.
And I have to point out, I'm surprised, because like in Sweden, all of this has been in public media many times the last 15, 20 years.
Yes.
And still no one seems to see it or read it.
Yes, it's a strange dilemma, but as I say, it doesn't only affect this area, it affects lots of areas of where some form of business has an effect on our health, and it's a common problem. So look, Yes to Life, we're helping people with cancer, and so I do want to spend quite a bit of time talking with you specifically about the relationship between this type of radiation and cancer. The report points out the fact that actually EMFs are used to treat medical conditions using levels below the current public safety standards, at least in 2007, proving that the body recognized and the low intensity EMFs. And because, of course, those medical treatments wouldn't work otherwise. They've approved the medical devices, but they're still the limits are above that. You know, and I assume that's still the case. Certainly, I talked to somebody many years ago who actually worked in this field. He's a British doctor working on, invented a cancer treatment which relied on radio frequencies in order to activate the treatment. And I spoke to him specifically then about mobile phone usage and that kind of thing. And he said, well, with what I know about cancer, I'd be extremely cautious of these devices. And so, you know, there's pretty well established a link between some types of cancer and EMFs. I wonder if we could start talking about childhood cancers, because this is a major concern. There seem to be two reasons why we should look at children particularly. One of them is the obvious one, is if they start when they're children, by the time they're adults, they've had extremely long exposure. The other one is this fact that, of course, their systems are still developing and therefore have the potential to develop completely wrong in some way or with some fault as a result of exposure. So, you know, there's very strong statements you made in your report in 2007, like there is little doubt that exposure to EMF causes childhood leukemia. So that's like pretty far out there, you know, statement in terms of certainty. I wonder if you could say some more about, you know, the links between childhood cancers and both types of radiation.
Well, to start with, luckily enough, childhood cancers in general are very rare, but we don't want them to increase in new cases per year. So therefore, it's very important to keep a close watch on them. And it goes back to the extremely important and very famous studies by Wertheimer and Lieper in the United States, who were the ones that first shown that there was an association between childhood leukemia and power lines. And they interpreted it as a power frequent magnetic field association. And to make a very long story short, that led to that World Health Organization in 2001 cancer classified such power frequent magnetic fields, which is a long word for household electricity, concerning its association to childhood leukemia. And that has not been changed. It's still valid. It's still up and running, you know. And it has to be pointed out that the risk as such, the additional risk, is very low and the association is not very strong, but it's still there, you know. And in the same way, 10 years later, May 31st, 2011, all forms of radio frequent fields and their association to certain brain tumors were also identified by the World Health Organization and also cancer classified in the same category as the power frequent magnetic fields had been 10 years before that. And also, as you pointed out, you know, since various forms of electromagnetic fields are used in, for instance, treatment, and maybe the most famous example is bone healing, which you can speed up using external magnetic fields. So there is, of course, a treatment association pointing to that cells are sensitive, and cancer as such, to sort of make it a very blunt image of it, is uncontrolled cell growth, and it's dependent on energy, food, blood supply, etc., and to feed it with external energies, because electromagnetic fields, that's just energy, you know, to feed it with additional energies and also at these biblical levels may be an avenue to see an increase in incidence of these cancer types. Luckily, and that has to be stressed, so far there isn't any such increase seen really. And for instance, in Sweden, which has been exposed for a long, long time since the 80s and at very high levels, there is actually a slight decrease in incidence for these particular brain tumors I mentioned before. So if the effect is real and not just a statistical, mathematical epidemiology figure, it doesn't seem to be very strong at all, or maybe it's not even there, you know, which would be excellent. I mean, again, I'm kneeling by my bed every evening saying that, please, God, make me wrong, you know, because down the road there could be a dramatic increase, and therefore it is such a very important way to always keep an eye on this. At the same time, I find it, from a legal point of view, interesting that the World Health Organization does this cancer classification, because in my, dull, boring Swedish mind, you know, I always see problems. What I see here is, again, a way to evict liability, because if something would happen, like in 10, 20, 50 years' time, they could always say, well, we did warn you in 2001 and we warned you again in 2011. Why didn't you listen? And this is important because, you know, the World Health Organization is part of the United Nations, and they could be put to legal liability if they don't react in due time. And they have already reacted. They have already partially said to parents, no, this is not safe. And for me, it's very odd that parents, for instance, in Sweden and in other countries, they are now forced to send their children to Wi-Fi-based schools where children are heavily exposed.
Yes.
More or less every school is that nowadays, you know. And the children are then, for all the years in school, exposed to something that the World Health Organization has cancer classified.
Mm.
And sometimes, you know, people trying to ridicule this cancer classification, they say, well, it's the same type of cancer classification as for coffee and diesel fumes and DDT. So it's of no big deal, you know. But which parent would allow their children to go to school where they would be exposed every day to DDT, diesel fumes, and drinking coffee?
Yes. Well,
Being forced to do it, you know. I mean, so I say again, I think, and together with a Norwegian colleague, Eina Flydahl, we wrote an article where we claim that the war is actually over. The knowledge is already here, and it will take some time for society to react. We do see reactions at the legal level already, at the political level to some extent, and I'm sure while we are talking that the industry is already preparing to also come up with tomorrow's green human-friendly technology. One such country, which I would like to point out, is Norway. They are very, very interested in producing tomorrow's human-friendly, and not only human-friendly, but biology-friendly communication devices. And what they would look like, I don't know. Maybe based on something completely
different. We need those.
Yeah.
Well, that's very heartening to hear that there's even such a thing in the making. Of interest here, of course, is kind of you saying there's the movements at different levels. So, of course, another level there's a movement at is the grassroots level.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of our listeners here will maybe be wanting to make changes in their own lives. And equally well, there's pressure to not have Wi-Fi in the classrooms, at schools and things, which is happening, coming from the parents. So I think the grassroots level is a very important one. And of course, in order to drive that, we need education, which means we need people to know the kind of things you're saying. You've already given me some statistics which are way beyond what I imagined, and I've got my head in this every day, actually. But, you know, immediately when I start talking to an expert like you, I find out that I'm underestimating the problem enormously.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you have to, a very quick comment to that is that I would say that the grassroots has been the most important part of this whole story. Without them, we as scientists could not have propelled the knowledge forward in the way we have, and they have also formed a very intelligent audience, and you know, many parents and grassroots members, they do have high-tech educations, they have legal educations, medical educations, and so on. They are not in any way stupid or anything like that. They are very, very intelligent. And they are also forming worldwide a huge number of movement groups, campaign groups, activist groups, asking for or demanding for changes. And just taking the example you took here with the wireless internet in the schools, if you instead have a wired system, of course the information that the children get to their computers would be exactly the same. There's no difference whatsoever, but they could get it in a shielded format. And finally, also, when I look upon Sweden, you know, Sweden is, according to statistics, the most computerized country in the world when you look on the educational system. And still, as you know, Sweden has plummeted the last years in different evaluations like the PISA evaluation. So these fantastic gadgets, they don't seem to really do the magic work they're supposed to do. So in Sweden right now, there's a lot of discussion going on that maybe we have to, which I have always claimed, take a few steps backwards, actually, and to really look upon and evaluate all these gadgets. And, you know, I have the great honor to meet sometimes the best chefs, for instance, in the world, and I meet the best gardeners in the world, and I'm always very impressed that in their tool shed, you know, They have like a spade, a rake, and a few other things.
Yes.
Not all these gadgets that people in panic buy at garden centers, forgetting
yes.
that they need a brain. They need a green brain, the green fingers and the green
yes.
brain, you know. And that's only from experience. You need to sit down, think, try again. And if the rake is old and worn out, that's all right, as long as your brain is up and running. And I think for the educational system in Sweden, people got so much in love with all these gadgets, all these flashy web pages and all these things, plays and whatever, you know, so they forgot about the basic educational values.
Mm. All right, well, it's good to hear you bring it back to kind of very human level, basically.
Well, yeah, human and very simplistic level, because I remember I met the gardener and we were talking for like an hour, and then he said, you know, at the end, well, now we have talked about making a garden. Have we done anything? No. We need to get down to practical work, you know, and I think that goes also to a lot of other aspects of life, that we shouldn't
yes.
be so afraid of being a little bit more practical instead of being blinded, really, by PR and ads and things saying that if you buy this new app for your mobile phone, then everything will fix itself.
Yeah.
No,
all your
it will not, of course.
Right. Okay, well, look, there's such a lot to talk about on this subject. I want to just be sure we sort of cover the waterfront as well as we can. I wonder if you could just briefly, just again, to give people a bit of perspective, that I mean, there's work being done on the association between EMFs and childhood cancers, with some of the major cancers like breast cancer, and of course the brain cancers have been a focus because of the fact you hold these things on your head.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if you could just give some idea of the scale of like the amount that your risk goes up for certain things, but if you take particular actions or you expose yourself in a particular way, just so people get a sense of how big a risk are these things?
Well, you know, again, to, for instance, look upon mobile phone usage. Nowadays, at least in Sweden, few people put them to their head. They keep them in their hand, and then they have some kind of wired or wireless earpiece. And they use them for that. And most of their time, they actually don't use them as telephones. They use them as computers, sending emails, looking around on the internet, playing games, etc. So
yeah.
the exposure, if we should look on the body parts, is the highest in their hand. And also, since they have lowered the telephone from their brain, organs of their bodies are now heavily exposed. For men, for instance, the testicles, and for women, the ovaries. And that is, in a way, a change in behavior. And from the risk point of view, if we look on it today and reflect it back, as I said before, on the incidence, the risk doesn't seem to be very high for cancers, but that's with today's knowledge. And if you use this precautionary principle, taking into account the already discussed cancer classifications of the World Health Organization, then the question is really if you should use it at all. I always tell people that are worried, you know, that start to look around in your life and ask yourself, do I really need to use this mobile phone, computer, this electric toothbrush, do I need to whip the cream with an electric whipper and so on, you know? And for every moment that you can say, no, I don't really need this, remove it. And if you just have to have a gadget, ask yourself, could I use it or buy it in a more shielded form? Are there alternatives? As we said before, you can have a cable internet instead of a wireless internet. So you need to look around, and since the health authorities, the governments and parliaments doesn't really hand out any strict regulations, one needs to be its own parliament and government and take its own responsibility for your own life, for your family's lives, you know.
So what you're saying is that you're ranking the risks that we're taking by using these devices to any degree as being quite significant, and therefore we should take, as you said, a precautionary principle, which is to minimize our use of them.
Well, I would go one step further. I wouldn't use them at all.
Right. Okay.
Because, you know, when you, now we are talking about a very, very narrow slit here in knowledge, and that's cancer. But there are so many other areas to be covered. Effects on the immune system, you have, effects on fertility, blood-brain barrier leakage, behavioral influences, and above all, the many times proven genotoxic effect of these radiofrequent fields on our genome, the DNA molecules. And as you probably know, genotoxicity is one of the very few aspects that the whole world community have said that if we see such genotoxicity in the development, for instance, of pharmaceutical drugs or food products, then they are not allowed to be further developed, marketed, or sold. And that's exactly what we see for these radiofrequency fields, that genotoxicity. And such effects on the genome could lead to, in the future or now, effects on cancer development, on disease development, damages to honeybees, to tomato plants, to bacteria, alterations of such, effects on the immune system, and of course, dramatic negative effects on fertility. And then there is quite a huge wealth of papers, for instance, on effects on male sperm cells. And to make a very long story short, male sperm cells shouldn't buy or use mobile phones. Mm. That's clear. That's clear, you know.
Right. Wow. Well, that's quite, it's quite a sort of, I mean, you covered the waterfront there. The reasons not to go there are enormous.
Yeah. And for me as a scientist, you know, I always tell people that I look upon myself as kind of a mental fire brigade soldier. And as the ordinary fire brigade soldiers, one of my work tasks is to look around and warn people and say, no, don't light a cigarette near the petrol station, you know, that's not a good idea. Yeah. Don't do it. And it's the same here. I have to be ethically and morally correct and say, look here, we are talking about tens of thousands of relevant papers. You need to read them. Don't trust me. Read for yourself. Make up your own mind. And if you think it's safe, well, then you can use it. If you think like the operators, the manufacturers, the insurance companies, the radiation protection boards, the World Health Organization, that it's not safe, then you need to react. Because they have already withdrawn from the legal area. They will not cover you in any way.
Right. Okay, so look, we've got 5 minutes left, and what I want to get now is the good take-home messages for the people who are listening. Okay, so a lot of people are concerned about this, and of course, as you said also, we have to take the power into our own hands. We have to make decisions about what's okay and what's not okay ourselves, and we do that on the best information we can get. So you've already said your number one strategy is, well, if you can avoid doing it, whatever it is, just don't do it.
Start there.
There are other strategies, of course, which will minimize your exposure, and you described one, which is to use a wired network rather than a wireless network. Where I live in my flat, if I click the wireless menu, I might turn mine off, but I'm surrounded by at least 25 others. I'm in a flat in London. So there's not really much option for not being exposed to...
Wait, there are.
Let's hear them now.
I mean, this is an excellent summary, as you say. You should really look upon it as a stepwise reaction. But what the person that has turned off his or her mobile phone could do is to listen to programs like this one, to think again, read. Don't trust any expert, definitely not me. Make up their own mind and then start, as so many grassroots activists have done, write to your local politicians, to your national politicians, your parliaments, your governments, your health protection agencies, etc. And mm-hmm. don't be shy. Be very Swedish, I would say. Be blunt, you know, and just say no more. Use the word no. It's very rarely used nowadays. People are just say yes, 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 thank you so much. But say no. For instance, now when I talk with you, I use a very old wired telephone. People sort of get shocked when they see it. Oh, it's so old, they say. And it's not that old, actually. It's like 10, 15 years old. And I do hope that the things I say doesn't come out different to if I would have used a mobile phone, a wireless mobile phone. It's exactly the same information content and the same value of it, you know. Mm-hmm. And people shouldn't be afraid to react. And I think there is already a very strong movement, and I see a lot of, should we say, political light, in the sense that the things we are talking about now, the last year has been up several times. For instance, at the European Union level, they are discussed at the Congress and Senate in the United States and in other countries, parliaments and governments and health authorities. There is a movement, definitely. And as I say, and we talked about before, at the other end of the scale, people also sense profit. I mean, there is a way here to come up with alternatives. And for instance, here in Sweden, when I give lectures, I ask the audience if, and I show them a picture of a very old computer screen, and I say, this is a high radiation, old fashioned computer screen. Do you want to buy it? And no one says, yes, 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 I want to have it. Everyone wants to have a low radiation screen. So that's the kind of consumer-based movements. And when I was in the European Union some years ago, I remember there was one of the members of the European Parliament who said that there is actually only one force that the European Union is really afraid of, and that's the consumers. The movement they represent is so big. So the very, very moment when, for instance, the citizens, the consumers say no to something, then an idea is dead, of course. So people should really feel that they do have a huge number of options, and doing this stepwise, and maybe one day people will wake up and realize, wow, we did it. Our children is not at jeopardy any longer. It is a safe school. And I'm the only, actually, on this planet who has pointed to that if you want to really have a safe society from this radiation point of view, only the natural background levels would be regarded as a safety level.
Right.
And that's not a big deal. I mean, as we said before, if we change society backwards to a safe, definitely safe one, and start from there, people would not be affected. They have to eat, breathe, live, go to school, work, and so on, anyhow.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, so just to round off in the last minute, you know, on top of the don't do it if you can possibly not do it, are there any other strategies which you think are worth considering in order to minimize exposure, such as, you've mentioned using a headset on your mobile, there are protective devices. Do they do anything, or are they a waste of time?
The protective devices are, as far as I know, more or less all of them just a waste of time and money. There are a few such protective devices that are based on regular physics, and they work, yes. There are pockets for mobile phones made of microwave shielding cloth, and they work, yes, indeed. But they are most of the time impractical. And then, of course, to always try to minimize the usage. But you mentioned, for instance, to use a headset. Well, yes, if you move the phone away from your body. And I have to remind you that in 1998, in Göteborg on the west coast of Sweden, there was a big conference about mobile phones and health. And I asked one of the physicists, having heard for several days, scientists at that time describing their results, and I said, well, please tell me, if we would use a headset, how far away from the body do we need to place the mobile phone so we definitely will be on the safe side from an exposure point of view? Would it be enough, like with 1 meter or 2 meters? And then he said exactly this to me. We had seen all this data from all these scientists, and he said, based upon what they have told us, it's very difficult to get give you an exact answer, but probably you would get away with 5 to 10 kilometers. You have to understand, you know, that the mobile phone, that's not a low-level radiation device. It's an extremely strong radiator. Few things can traverse tens of kilometers in open air. It's a very, very strong torch from that point of view. And, for instance, astronomers always reminds me of that if you put a mobile phone in standby mode on the surface of the moon, seen from planet Earth, it will be the strongest radiation source in the universe.
Okay.
When it comes to radio frequency fields.
I think that is a message that you're going to have to leave us with there, because we're out of time.
It's okay.
It's been amazing to talk to you about this, because it's so great to hear somebody who's so deeply involved and has such a great understanding of the area talking with such authority about it, and when there's so much uncertainty. So I hope our listeners have found that as valuable as I have. I've learned a lot today.
Well, thank you so much. And I repeat again and say to all the listeners, don't trust me. Read for yourself. Think again. You have the capacity to understand this. It's all on the internet. You can download, you can find the information, and make up your own mind for yourself and your family, and live by it.
Okay. Very many thanks indeed, Ole. That's
thank
great.
You so much, Robin. Thank you so much.
That's all for this week's show. Remember that you can find links to any material mentioned in the show on the Yes to Life website. That's yestolife.org.uk. Just follow the links to radio. Also, do check out the Yes to Life section in the Health Triangle magazine here at UK Health Radio, where we include additional material from guests that have been on the show. Thanks very much for listening. Do join me again next week for another angle on cancer and cancer treatment.